Welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words. I'm your co-host, Judy Alexander, and I'm here with my husband, Dr. Bruce Chalmer.
Well, hello, Judy, and hello, viewers and listeners. Our topic for today is...
Erotic Orientation and Your Relationship, an interview with Dr. Joe Court.
And we just finished that interview, and folks, you're in for a treat.
Mm-hmm.
That was really fascinating, informative. Joe Court is a really interesting guy, talking all, you know, we say erotic orientation, which is already in sort of an interesting term.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same as sexual orientation.
Right, and he will talk about the distinction between the two.
And talk about, you know, I'm going to give a little teaser here for some of the topics that even if you're straight, cisgendered, heterosexual, as we are, and, you know, he talks about the fact that even monogamous relationships, you need to negotiate your monogamy. You need to know exactly what that means. That gets interesting. So check out that article, that interview that we did.
Yes.
He did an article, which is what led us to led us to him.
Right.
I hope you'll enjoy that. But before we do that, let's put in a word for various and sundry of our things to promote.
Okay.
Starting with...
Well, what would you like to start with? The book that started it all?
Since we're into starting.
Okay.
Yes.
Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back.
That's a book I came out with in, it was Leap Day, February 29th of 2020. And 3 years later, along came...
It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy Is Wrong.
I said along came as if it were a baby. It is sort of like that when you write
like
a book.
It is like a baby, yeah. Right? You have a gestation period where you're, you know, creating it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple other booklets, too, which we'll just kind of mention in passing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is...
Well, there's the giveaway,
yes.
7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life, when you subscribe to Dr. Chalmers' newsletter.
And when you do that, you can do that right from our podcast website, CTIN7, that's the number 7, CTIN7.com. When you do that, if you sign up for that, you will get a link to a PDF of that lovely booklet. I think it's a really neat booklet, 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life.
Absolutely.
And you'll get that absolutely free. If you want to buy the book, you can buy it on Amazon. It's cheap. I forgot how much I'm asking for it, but it's whatever it is, it's cheap, at twice the price. You can do that. And also, if you want to get the audiobook or the Kindle version of that, you can get that from Amazon.
Yes,
and then
can.
This other much more niche-oriented book.
My husband complains about my cleaning. What do I do? Hint, it's not about the cleaning.
That's right. And that is a book that I wrote for the literally hundreds of people each month who seem to end up on our website, on my website.
Looking at your blog about
looking
cleaning.
About that particular thing, yes.
Man.
We also have a commercial to do. And Judy, tell folks what the commercial is for.
Okay, the commercial is for our sponsor, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber.
Yeah, now in this particular podcast episode, here's a teaser for folks. we almost reveal Laria's actual identity, but we don't quite.
No, we don't.
So we're not quite doing that yet now either, I guess.
No, we're not.
But in any case, we know her very well.
Mm-hmm. And I did do the audiobook.
And Judy did the audiobook.
Which is coming out soon.
Which is, yes, indeed.
It hasn't come out yet.
Hasn't come out yet, but it's in production.
But it is
production.
Available in paperback and Kindle as of this podcast on June 30th, 2023.
Yep. And when you get a hold of that book, The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber, you will, first of all, if you like erotica, which is what it is, you will love this book. It is very well-written erotica, and that's, you know, not all erotica is equally well-written. This is very well-done erotica. And it is based in the Bible and has a very Jewish perspective, but not exclusively Jewish. It's based in stories that are...
Right. Old Testament. So
Old Testament stories
to anybody who knows the Bible.
Christians would call it.
Right.
And it really is grounded in a deep respect for and love for the text and the characters involved. And so, if you're into that kind of thing, we heartily recommend that book. And so, before we go on to our interview, we have to tell you about our
merch.
Our podcast merch. Right. For those of you who are just doing the audio version of this, we are holding up our beautiful Couples Therapy in 7 Word mugs, coffee mugs. And
in 2 different sizes.
Yeah, 15
on
ounces.
On one side is our beautiful, yes, I'm
15
sorry.
And 11, yes.
15 and 11 ounces, yes. On one side is our beautiful logo, and the other side is our Be Kind, Don't Panic, and Have Faith motto.
Indeed. So that's just the thing you need.
Yes,
folks,
yes.
You all need that. And I have to hold up the tote bag as well, which I just think is just phenomenally a wonderfully designed tote bag, and it has the same
nice
logo
material
on one side, and it has
very
the same
sturdy
motto on the other.
Lightweight.
We use these tote bags all the time and invite you to use it. And of course, one of the things you can do with those tote bags is when you buy my books or when you buy Laurie's book and you're giving them as gifts, you can put them in a tote bag, and that's even better gift
for
folks.
Right, it'll hold your mugs, your t-shirts, your books.
All of that. And
all
you can
of that.
Put them in a handy dandy tote bag. And so without further ado, let us get on with our interview with Dr. Joe Court, and we will see you on the other side.
Our guest today is Dr. Joe Court. Dr. Court is the clinical director and founder of the Center for Relationship Health in Royal Oak, Michigan. He is a board certified clinical sexologist, author of 4 books, lecturer, and facilitator of therapeutic workshops. In his psychotherapy practice, Dr. Court specializes in marital problems and conflicts, mixed orientation marriages, male sexuality and sexual health concerns, out of control behaviors, sexual identity issues, childhood sexual abuse, LGBTQIA affirmative therapy, male sexual fluidity, and imago relationship therapy. Dr. Court also hosts the Smart Sex Love podcast. Joe, welcome to Couples Therapy in 7 Words.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I do a lot, don't I? It's exhausting.
You do. Wow. That's a mouthful.
I'm not sure we even included everything in there, but
yeah, you know, no, there's more.
But wait, there's more. So tell us, how did you get into this work that you do? And, you know, tell us something about your own journey that brought you here.
Yeah, so I, growing up, I was a gay little boy in the 70s, and I was bullied and really tortured, humiliated by the kids in school, and to the point where I was isolating in my bedroom and moving toward a depression. And my mother took me to therapy at Jewish Family Services, which was not far from where we lived. And it changed my life. I met this guy, Stephen Advocate, who, by the way, is in his 80s, and we still talk today. We're friends now. It's more of a friendship than anything.
That's his actual last name, Advocate?
Yeah, I know. Everyone says that. Yep, Stephen Advocate. Yep.
That's amazing.
He was from New York, so he was very gay positive in a Jewish family service clinic that was very psychoanalytical and dynamic and not sex positive or gay positive. So I was super lucky. 3.5 years with him. And I just remember thinking, that's what I want to do. Like, he was like a father to me, really. I saw him twice a week. I walked through the snow. Honestly, it was like he was so important to me. And then I became him.
Well, that's great. Too bad I didn't know you. I had a lot of gay friends back in the 70s in high school.
I know. I needed more.
So, you know, you mentioned a bunch of things in that bio, and I was curious. Well, we're curious about a number of different things. One of the things that sort of caught me was, how do you work with mixed orientation marriages? And of course, in saying that, you know, I know one of the things you talk about is erotic orientation, which is different from sexual orientation. Could you address some of that stuff? It's interesting stuff.
Sure, for sure. So my entire 38-year career, I've worked with mixed orientation marriages where one spouse is straight and the other spouse is gay or just not straight in some way. And the reason I think they have flocked to me over the years, it's gotten more and more and more. It's a large part of my work today. It's because I don't judge them. When they go to a therapist, the therapist is like, straight spouse, you got to move on with your life. Are you kidding me? Gay spouse, you got to move on with your life. Are you kidding me? And it's like, you know, our job is to protect our clients from us. But the therapists that are doing this work, they don't do that. They insert themselves in their bias and judgment. And the clients don't want that. It may be that that was what they decide. But before they do, they just want someone to sit with them and help them negotiate with the proper guidance of what's right for them. Mm-hmm. I've never been heterosexually married. Sometimes I think in another life, which I don't believe in, but maybe if there is one, I was, because I have so much compassion. It's like people who still love each other. And it's heartbreaking because this is now in the way that's coming between them. So then you talked about the erotic orientation. So there's a sexual orientation. That's to whom we're attracted. Men, women, both, multiple genders, neither gender. And then there's your erotic orientation, the things that turn you on, the things that get you off. And what I started noticing, we all have noticed it, but I have words for them now, is that there are many couples that have a mixed erotic orientation where one is into this kind of sex and the other is into that kind of sex and it doesn't jive. Mm. Or one is kinky and one is vanilla. Or one wants it more or one wants it less. So your erotic orientation are the things that turn you on. And so I work with that too.
Mm. Yeah, that's really an interesting distinction that, you know, I've encountered that in my practice. I work with mostly couples and I'd encountered it, but didn't have language for it until I was reading what you were writing about. And I just found it really fascinating. That phenomenon of not trying to insert our biases into the work, that's one of my favorite things as well. I will tend to reveal my own biases, not by way of imposing them, but by way of discharging them.
Yes.
I'm coming from a, you know, cisgendered heterosexual kind of heteronormative view and recognize, okay, that predisposes, but there's a better word than that. Anyway, it orients me toward certain ways of thinking, which I realize are not necessarily going to be terribly helpful to my clients.
No, I love that.
Yeah. It is so interesting. You know, it's another thing. I'm curious about your experience of this too. Because I've talked with numbers of therapists over the years about burnout, and I love my work. I'm 72, and I'm just at the point where I'm just kind of winnowing it down to the stuff I love to do. I just got rid of insurance from my practice after many years of accepting it. Because, you know, whatever. The thing that prevents burnout, I think, the reason I'm able to work and feel energized by it is that I'm not trying to sell anybody a bill of goods. I'm not trying to pretend that I know better than people that I work with, you know, how they should live. And it's interesting, as you're describing your view of, you know, mixed orientation marriages or whatever, it seems like you're in a similar place. You're not trying to impose your thoughts on the clients you work with.
Right. No. And the thing that helps me with burnout is that I think I would burn out if I only saw clients. But that's not what I do. I write books like you have in your background. I see your books. I've gone to your website. I do seminars. I do intensives. I do so many. I teach, you know what I mean? So that helps me with my burnout too. But it's true. I mean, of course I have a bias. I like what you said. You discharge it, you don't.
I don't impose it.
Yeah, you don't impose it. I like that.
If you don't talk about it, you're apt to impose it if you're not aware of it. Yes. Bill Doherty talks about that.
Yes.
The idea that, you know, we have values, of course, and if we don't become aware of them, we can unconsciously impose them on folks, and it doesn't do them any good.
Right. Right. It doesn't. I agree. So, and the thing about mixed orientation and mixed erotic orientation is that there's usually one that says, "I want this," so there's a yes in the room, and then there's one that says, "No, I don't want this." There's a no in the room, and for most therapists, the no is no, and then the conversation stops. Mm-hmm. And no is no for sure. But the conversation shouldn't stop because there's still a yes in the room. And then people feel threatened by that. Well, what does that mean? Does the no have to say yes? No, but the no needs to listen to what the yes wants. And maybe there's some creation of some solution that we haven't even thought of on this planet yet because you're having this conversation that works for both of you. Mm-hmm. And therapists stop it and they don't do that.
Yeah, I was reading your book. And one of the things that I enjoyed was when you were talking about how to have a healthy sexual conversation.
And let me suggest, why don't you, because you've written several books, why don't you hold up that one?
Yes.
This one. It's called Erotic Orientation, since we're mostly talking about that today. So can I read some of the points that you brought up? Okay. What satisfies you? What would you like me to do more of? Right? Because it sounds like a lot of couples, you know, freak out when they find out these things about their partners, right?
Yes. Yep.
In the act of making love, can we tell each other what we like, whether something needs to be harder or softer, where touching feels the best? And, you know, thinking about this and conversations that we've had in podcasts over the years, it's just amazing that a lot of couples don't talk about these things.
Mm, right. And, it's right. You know,
they flip out or they shut down when they, because they don't know how to have those conversations.
and neither do therapists. And so therapists are so untrained around sexual health, and we've been taught not to have those conversations.
Yeah.
And so then we can't even help them be comfortable.
Yeah. I was at a training, I think I've told the story before. Mm-hmm. I was at a training last year, continuing education training, and it was on Zoom. There was probably 100, 125 therapists there, and it was about couples therapy. And the trainer said, okay, how many of you did a little poll? How many of you ask about a couple's sex life in the first or second session? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, of course, right? And it was about 30%.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, and lots of people are saying, oh, no, I'll wait till they bring it up. And I'm thinking, seriously? I mean, you don't wait to bring up any of the other stuff. It's as if you're afraid to talk about it, which actually turns out to be the case. Lots of therapists are afraid to talk about it.
Right. Therapists will say, well, I wait for them to bring it up. And I'm like, oh, do you wait for them to bring up trauma questions? Do you wait for them to bring up family of origin issues? No, I bring those up. Mm-hmm. Then why don't you bring this up? You're uncomfortable. And it's not, I'm not shaming therapists. They just don't know how to do it. They haven't been taught that there should be two conversations, the relationship conversation and the sexual relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's interesting with respect to what you were talking about, the how difficult it is to have that conversation. I know certainly in broadly speaking, in the heterosexual world, speaking as a cisgendered male, we tend to suck at that.
Yes.
We tend to take, and I've often had this conversation with couples where the man will be offended if the woman says, hey, not so hard, or, you know, not there, but here, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm often saying, wow, if you take that as a gift, she is offering you the gift of how to turn her on. My God, what an incredible gift.
Yes.
Take that as this wonderful thing and then, you know, smile rather than be offended. But a lot of people are offended. And of course, then the woman in that story is not only possibly she has her own hangups about it and also keeps recognizing that if she says something to him, he's going to get all offended.
Yeah.
So it ends up shutting down the conversation.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And then when men suggest a new fantasy or something they want to do differently, mm-hmm. I mean, this is what I see in my office. Women could have the same reaction, but I see more men might say, hey, I'd like to try this with you. The woman immediately says, you're having an affair, you're watching porn, you're looking at some other woman and not me, and now you want me to be her, rather than, even if all that's true, I want to do this with you. Mm-hmm. I may have learned this wherever, but you are the prize here, and I want to do it with you. And that's not the automatic recognition.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Now, how do you deal with couples where, let's say, one is into BDSM and one is into the more vanilla sex? Like, how do you overcome that divide?
Yeah, so I just wrote that. I don't know if this is where you found me from that article I wrote on Psychotherapy Networker.
Yes, that is actually. And have you written several? Because I think I recognized your name before that article.
Yes. Yep. I've done other LGBT stuff, straight men who have sex with men, all that stuff.
Oh yeah.
And I did something else I can't remember, but this one, mixed orientation. But this one was I was so happy they were letting me do this because it was sort of pushing the envelope a little bit to even write this article in that magazine. The idea is that, okay, so one is kinky and one isn't. All right, so let's say they're into BDSM. So right away, I'm gonna generalize, because I see people think because I'm gay and all my books are gay, that all my clients are gay, but 75% of my clients are straight. I've always seen, in Detroit, Michigan, I could have never made an entire practice out of LGBT. In fact, straight people will call me and say, do you see straight people? And I feel like that kid in The Sixth Sense. There's one there, like I came from some gay planet and then, you know. Anyway, so the man discloses, I'm into this. And so then she feels threatened by it, like, because she may not be into it. She feels like he's going to force this on her. She doesn't want that. And that makes sense. And then she feels that she doesn't know him anymore. Like, how come you didn't tell me this from the beginning? Differently than gay couples, you're right. And even lesbian couples, we talk about it in our ads, really, dating ads, right in a way. So we don't want to get together if you're not into this. So now you have it. And so then the first thing I try to do is help them. I call it cracking the erotic code. So that same book you were holding up, I wrote another book for gay men, exactly the same thing, but it's all gay men examples, called Cracking the Erotic Code. What is the non-sexual meaning of why he's into BDSM? Mm. Not to pathologize it at all, because we now know there's no more trauma or negative issues, pathological issues in kink than there is in vanilla. Mm-hmm. There just isn't. But if she can understand, oh, you're into this because it means this about your mother, this about your father, and it's gotten eroticized. It's gotten embedded in your erotic orientation. Now she could have erotic empathy for him and erotic compassion for him. And then she still may not want to do it, but at least it's not this twisted thing of you want to do what? And then they can talk together, have a conversation about how do we do this? Do you go watch porn on your own? Do we watch it together? Do you, you know, go out in the relationship and hire somebody as a sex worker? Do we have an open relationship? Are we going to make it as a marriage? There's so many different ways to talk about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. The solution always seems to be what I use the word intimacy writ large, which is to say, to be able to be who you are in the presence of your partner doing the same. And Yes. What happens, not to get all mystical, as I usually preface it by saying, well, not to get all mystical, but an intimate conversation creates a joint mind. And uh-huh. and you were saying this earlier, in fact, you think of stuff you wouldn't have thought of. And that includes the therapist as well. The three of us sitting in an office will think of stuff none of us would have thought of without having an intimate conversation.
Yes. And when
a couple can do that, all of a sudden things that seemed impossible can start to seem maybe not possible, but at least intriguing.
And absolutely.
And then they can get someplace. And of course, someplace, sometimes where they end up is breaking up.
Yeah,
I've seen it happen as well. But that can often, well, how much should I reveal about my own past in this context? But my own past, the story I tell of we're a second marriage. We've been together about 20 years now, but we're a second marriage. The story of my first marriage is that both my ex and I went on to marry really wonderful women. And so we're a lot that's how that turned out. So okay. I have some experience with the mixed orientation thing. And I remember that sense of clarity that it was painful, but it was also, you know, when she finally figured out what the situation was, it was such clarity. And we did end up breaking up, but it was a relief.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
It went very well at that point because we weren't trying to fight with what reality was.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, once we were able to figure it out. So, you know, you never know how it's going to turn out, but that phenomenon of intimate conversation is what facilitates it.
Right, and the therapists themselves being willing and able to sit with not knowing. Like it used to be, you know, even with LGBT, right? It used to be, okay, you're lesbian, I know what that means. You're gay, I know what that means. No, I don't. When you tell me you're lesbian, it tells me nothing about your sexual history, nothing about your sexual life today and who you're being sexual with. I have to ask you what it means to you, and I have to sit with all the vagueness of what all this means, even with these couples.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was fascinated in your book about how even monogamous, let's say heterosexual couples, that monogamy isn't so clear as we tend to think it is, which I found fascinating. It's like, oh, yeah, it depends on what you mean by that.
Yeah. Can you go into a little bit more detail about negotiating monogamy? What you mean by that?
Yeah. So let me just tell you how I came up with this understanding that monogamy means different things. I had a gay male couple and I asked them if they were monogamous or open or, you know, whatever. And they said, we were monogamous. And then 3 months later, they had this vacation and they had all these three ways and they came back and they were telling me about it. And I said, I thought you told me you're monogamous. I'm going through my notes and everything. And they said, we are. And I said, tell me what monogamy means to you, which now I say to everybody. Yeah. And they said, we only play together on vacation. Uh-huh. And they negotiated that. So that's what needs to happen is, and people don't understand that you can negotiate this and that if people can cheat even in open relationships, because cheating just means I broke the agreement. We made an agreement and I broke it. That's all we're talking about. And then I'm noticing younger cisgender straight people are opening up like weeks after a marriage or before the marriage. It's not about, it's adding to their marriage. It's not an intimacy disorder the way therapists anecdotally labeled it many years.
Yeah. Now, of course, I have often mentioned to folks in my checkered background before I was a therapist, I was a statistician, actually on my way to getting my PhD in psychology. And so I will often comment to people, I don't get to see, and I'll bet this is going to change if I live long enough to practice for a bunch more years, but I don't get to see relationships where things like open relationships or polyamory work out well, because what are they making an appointment with me for? You know, I only get to see it with that is often the case. But even within kind of whatever you would call standard monogamy, you know, heterosexual monogamy, where the assumption is, okay, well, the one thing we know is we're not having sex with anybody else. We're not doing three ways. We're not hiring sex workers. Even within that, there are the couples who say, well, yeah, but if you look at porn, that's cheating. Or I've had couples where one, almost always the woman, would say, if he's masturbating, it's cheating, you know, without me.
Yep, I've had
if
that.
he's thinking about someone else when we're having sex, it's cheating. Which is
I've had men a
Christian thing, I guess.
Yeah, I've had men be jealous and think it's cheating if she uses a sex toy.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. I've heard that as well.
Yeah. I've had men say to their wives, my dick and hard-on is available 24/7. I could have food poisoning and my dick is available 24/7. And she's like, it's not about that. I just want to please myself without having to deal with you. You know?
No, it is interesting. That is, a lot of men feel sort of threatened by the existence of the vibrator. Again, it's that same dichotomy. Rather than seeing it as, oh my God, you know, we're introducing something. It's an enhancement. She's saying, this will make me happier with you. You know, I mean, we can do this together and or alone, but it's a gift. But of course, a lot of guys will see it as a threat.
So that's part of the negotiation, right?
Yes, right. So like gay male couples have a 50% rate of having open relationships. Mm. All the research points to that. And some people think it's higher, whether it is or not. We negotiated from the beginning. I think it's been going on since the beginning of gay time. That's what I always say. And the negotiation is, I know you love me. I'm secure with that. If my body's not enough for you, or you want a different type or a different experience, go do that as long as you come back to me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it always goes that smoothly, but because they're talking about it and it's not threatening. Like when I met my husband, it was 1993. I've been with him 30 years. Back then we didn't have the internet. So I knew where his porn was and I knew what his porn looked like. And I looked nothing like the guys that turned him on. He knew where my porn was. He looks nothing. I'm not attracted to guys that look like him. We fell in love. We made a sex life together for ourselves, understanding that we had our own interests in other types of men. It wasn't threatening the way it is to lesbian couples and the way it can be to straight couples.
Yeah. Yeah. I've definitely noticed that difference. Maybe saying the obvious to a gay guy, which is, turns out gay men are very different from lesbians, aren't they?
Very.
In case you didn't know that, you know.
Yes.
I have noted that in my practice as well, which is overwhelmingly, you know, heterosexual folks.
Yeah.
But that is an interesting phenomenon. When we interviewed, actually, we interviewed our rabbi of our congregation who was gay, a gay man. And he talked about how gay men, and exactly what you're saying, of course, that gay men, you know, what we took from that, I think, and he pointed this out, heterosexual folks can learn a lot from gay men's ability to just be straight up front.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Double entendre there. To be gaily up front about, you know, what sexual taste.
Like, you know, gay men are having better conversations when it comes to sex and relationships.
In general, we are. And we understand that the sex we're going to have is transactional. It's not like we're going to be falling in love. Like when I work with straight couples, she is always worried if he's involved with somebody that he's in love with that person. Mm-hmm. And it's often not the case at all. He's just having a transactional experience. And it makes sense she worries about that, but it's often not the case.
Yeah. I tend to think there's evolution behind that. You know, the idea that the female of our species is going to worry that the male won't hang around when she gets pregnant and gives birth to helpless young, and which ties her down for years, unlike most other species. And so the idea that women would look to men for signs of commitment as well as signs of virility or signs of ability to impregnate her kind of makes sense.
It also in a hetero relationship, the man wants to make sure he's the father and it's not like, you know, the mailman or the milkman that she's been fooling around with.
I was just going to mention Helen Fisher, the anthropologist. It's a lot. Her description of what our species does in terms of our mating practices is we do serial monogamy with clandestine adultery. It's like it's not a bug; it's a feature. You know, we do the adultery thing because it works for women to have that option because they can get some gain from that. You know, in anthropological terms, but mostly we do the serial monogamy thing because the women need the father to hang around and drag me to the door of her cave.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I do that frequently.
Yes, you do. I love it.
Well, one thing we should also mention is that lesbians have something to teach us that I always wanted, and I can't write this book because lesbians don't want men writing about their lives. Mm. I can barely do anything in social media. I'm a big TikTok sensation. I don't know if you know this, but I have 652,000 followers on TikTok that follow me.
We're
it's awesome. I'm a,
I'll have to look it for
oh
you.
My God, it's like made, transformed my practice, transformed my platform. And because you're talking to people that don't know you, you're thrown onto their pages and they see you. So I did, when I even do TikTok about lesbians, they get super angry with me and they come after me. Not all of them, but there's mm-hmm. a lot, there's a, but what I would, I've always wanted to write an article, what everything you can learn that's good about sex in a relationship, you can learn from a lesbian. And not much of that is, they don't always have penetrative sex. They don't need to have penetrative sex. They don't need to have orgasm, and it's still sexual. It's still intimate. And one of the things I've done in the gay male community, I don't know if you know this about me, but you know, the way we have sex is often focused on penetration, just like heterosexual. PIV for penis and vagina, mm-hmm. and then PIA for penis and anus. And there's a top, the one who gives anal sex. There's a bottom, the one that receives anal sex. There are guys that are versed, can go both ways. There are guys that are top verse, they mostly give, but they can take. And there are bottom verse where there's, you know, they can, they're mostly bottoms, but they can top. But there was never anybody like me ever talked about, which is, I've never done that. I don't want to do that. I'm not interested in giving. I'm not interested in getting. And I've been taught, but I've been shamed in the gay male community. You haven't met the right guy. Like I'm some lesbian. You haven't had it done right. You haven't, you know, like what trauma did you have? You know, you're not really gay. You know, like your anus has a sexual orientation. You know, my anus doesn't have a sexual orientation. It doesn't know whether, it just knows it's closed.
You could ask your anus. I mean, you could interview your anus.
I have. It told me. I like that. But anyway, so I came up with the term side. And I thought, well, why is, if you can say top and bottom, what's wrong with saying side?
Wow.
And everyone laughed at me. But I did an article around it. And it like brought out all these gay men that said, thank you for depathologizing. Then I started a Facebook group. We have 7,200 men from all over the world that are all sides. And then Grindr, and then Dan Savage. You know who Dan Savage is?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Like gave me credit and said, this is the word. Dr. Joe Court has given a community a name. It's been incredible for me.
Yeah, that is amazing. You know, that's the old statistician in me. Anytime I hear someone say something like you're saying, it's like, gee, I don't seem to fit those categories. And here's another one. If you're in it, then there's probably thousands of other people in it too.
Yes, yes.
It's not like a bizarre phenomenon.
No.
Yeah.
And a lot of straight people are side. So the reason I only made it for gay men is because in the LGBT community, since I'm gay, white, male, cisgender, I'm supposed to not talk about lesbians, bisexuals, trans, and people of color.
Yeah.
Stay in your own lane, they say. So I stay in my own lane, and then I develop the word side for gay men. And then you know what they say to me? Why didn't you make it for us? Why did you erase us? What happened to us? I'm like, you told me to stay in my own lane. It's like so angering.
You'll but have to me, team even, up with a lesbian. That way you'll have a little bit more cred.
I know. I should. But straight people can be sides. I have lots of straight women and men that say, you know, erectile issues, vaginismus, or just not into it. Everything else they like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to start using that term now. It's a really useful term.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. You know, I find myself, and here I am, I have to situate myself yet again as, well, I'm cisgendered, white, heterosexual.
I know.
I'm Jewish, which is not exactly white, but non-Jews don't know that.
Right, that's true. I know, right.
Whatever. We've been
another topic.
We're sort of provisionally white. It depends on how they're looking at us at any given time. But aside from that, no, it's interesting. So with all of that privilege behind me, I'm tending to think, I wonder if we'll grow up a little. You know, it totally makes sense to me that people would get very angry. Like, you know, I don't want to straight-splain to you, and I don't want to mansplain to women, and I don't want to whatever the hell it would be. I get that. The assertion of that identity makes sense. I have noted, maybe I'm over hopeful, but I've noted it seems like things are loosening up a little bit around things like that. You'll still get lots of people complaining bitterly, but I think we're starting to notice that, you know, treating these various identity categories as if they are completely definitive, there's a loss in that as well.
Well, I think as more people are more open about sexuality and fluidity, and transgender has been gaining, well, I don't want to say great, well, some acceptance. Or greater
more right yes
been. It's, you know, certainly not as closeted as it once was. I think you are going to see more of that now. Yeah, I'm not a therapist, so I can't, you know, speak to all that stuff, but just from what I read and from what I've interviewed and from what I hear, so I'm sure that that has a lot to do with it. And I'm sure you've both seen your practices changing over the years in terms of that whole
yeah
that you whole segment.
Where I've seen it especially, and Joe, I'm curious to your experience, I've seen it especially in the general domain of feminism, which is to say, you know, at one time, and when I started in private practice, about 28 years ago, whatever it was, it's like there were sorts of conversations it seemed like you couldn't have with certain mm-hmm. kinds of people, anything that involved questioning orthodoxy. And, you know, the various orthodoxies, depending on who you were talking to. And mm-hmm. over the years, it seemed a little easier. You know, I've had feminist-minded women who will say things that I think feminist-minded women would not have said in the 1970s or 80s. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I try to keep the language PG here. So, but instead of, you know, I've had, like, again, very feminist-minded women saying, I wish he would stop being so nice to me and just F me. And that's, I don't think I would have heard people who call themselves feminists say that along, you know.
I like what you're saying. And I think it's because they had to hold on so tight because it was so, they were going against and fighting against misogyny.
Yeah.
And same with gay men, right? Like we fought so hard to hang on to our orientation that some of us were like, well, wait a minute, maybe I'm a little fluid. Maybe I'm a little bi. I was at a party 10 years ago. I'm 60 now. I was 50 at the time. And I'm in front of this really nicely shaped woman that I find attractive. And I would like Cher or Diana Ross or whatever. I'm doing that because they're in my office. I have pictures all of them. And she was wearing this zipper dress. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I just want to unzip her and have sex with her right here. And I was horrified, horrified that I had that thought. And then uh-huh. it kept at me. And so I went back to my trauma therapist because I was sexually abused by a woman in my childhood. Uh-huh. And I was told back then, oh, it's because of that you're gay, which is not true. But of course, there's still that little Joey that's wondering. So I'm thinking, am I a latent heterosexual? Am I, you know, going to have to leave Mike and my book burned and, you know, all canceled? And she was like, you're fluid. You probably, it's like what you just said. Like I was clinging to the gay and I don't even know if I could do it, but it's there.
Yeah. What was the article? It was a few weeks ago in the New York Times. Maybe you saw it. There was an article by a gay man who was saying, I don't want to be normal. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to be, in other words, I don't want it everything to be so normalized that, you know, I don't, and I related to it as a Jew. I was thinking, yeah, I keep thinking that. It's like, you know, it's okay that we're a minority. It really is. We don't have to be, everybody doesn't, you know, it's okay if people say Merry Christmas in general to me.
Yeah,
and I don't celebrate Christmas. I don't have to freak out about that. And there was a time in my life when, you know, I was so feeling like, oh my God, we're at risk, which we, of course we are. You know, at risk as gay men are at risk.
Yeah.
But that sense that I had to so protect the idea that you couldn't discriminate against me, that I would be very sensitive to things like that. And I realized, no, it's kind of cool to be a minority, actually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. Yeah. It is.
I also saw a statistic recently that straight people routinely way overestimate the percentage of gay people or the percentage of LGBTQ people. I think it was the numbers they were saying straight people think it's about 25 to 30%. And it's actually about 7 to 10, depending on how.
Yeah. It could even be lower, but maybe because of the visibility.
Yeah.
There's so much more visibility. I don't know. It is strange. I think they overestimate
Jews too.
Well, same thing with Jews.
I was just going to say.
There's so many of us.
Right. But, you know, the other thing you should know in the LGBT community is that we're not a community. It's a big lie. Mm-hmm. We do not get along. You'll see us on Pride Day and everybody looks like we're all happy and they are. And everyone looks like we're all getting along. But when the sun goes down, lesbians go to their land. Gay men go to their land. Nobody wants the bisexuals and nobody wants the trans.
Yes.
And that's the truth.
Yeah. And actually, that article I'm remembering, that article was about this guy who was at it was funny to see because I think he said he's in his 30s. And he thought of himself as an old timer because he was at this Pride March and all these young folks, says the guy in his 30s. I'm thinking, oh, tell me about it. but it was interesting. That changed just in like 10, 15 years.
Yes.
These people in their early 20s who were just all over the map in terms of various kinds of identities. And he just wanted to be a gay guy, you know?
Yeah, right.
It seemed like it wasn't possible to do that.
Well, now, I mean, this is another conversation. I haven't really thought about it too much, but now there's this discussion of we've been erased. Have gays and lesbians been erased because there's so many other identities? I don't feel that way. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. I'm still talking about all my stuff on social media, writing more things. But I understand the concept that it's been so diluted.
Yeah. Well, what else should we be asking you about?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. The straight men who have sex with men is probably, well, that's why I'm so famous on TikTok, TikTok famous. My very first video that I did was called, I said, did you know that straight men can have sex with men and still be straight? And that when a man has one non-heterosexual thought, he's stigmatized. When a woman has one non-heterosexual thought, she's fetishized. Both are problematic. Mm-hmm. And then because women can be lugs. Do you know what a lug is? Are you old enough to know what a lug is?
Lesbian until graduation.
That's right. Not everybody knows that, right? So women are like, oh yeah, I played around with women, totally fine. If a guy said, yeah, I sucked dick while I was in school a little bit and I got probed anally, he would be never again seen as straight. Uh-huh. And I think it's wrong because I've seen in my office too many times, and I've known personally straight men that like to have sex with men for all kinds of reasons. I wrote a whole book on it. And people on social media go crazy, especially LGBT. The straight white male cisgender, if he does anything, even thinks about being gay, he's not straight. Yeah. And that's so stupid.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm thinking of Greek culture, you know, classical Greek culture, where of course they didn't have those definitions of straight and gay, where, you know, sex with men was elevated to a higher level than sex with mere women, you know, was highly misogynist, but it's like, yeah, men weren't defining themselves as either straight or gay at that point.
No. And the reason, and the thing is, you know, I think you said this earlier, we only see populations that are troubled in our office. It can't generalize, right? But I would see, and I spent two chapters on this in my book, Is My Husband Gay, Straight or Bi, on men who were traumatized by male perpetrators. So they're returning to the scene of the sexual crime. It's mm-hmm. a trauma reenactment. It's not a sexual urge. It's a trauma urge. That's different, but mm-hmm. they're still engaging in sex. That's one of the main reasons. Other reasons are they like anal sex. They like their prostate played with. They're afraid to tell their girlfriends and wives, or they do, and the girlfriend and wives think that he's gay because he wants this. Mm-hmm. And they come in here and I say what I said to you. Your anus doesn't have a sexual orientation. It doesn't know whether it's gay, straight, or bi. You're a straight guy that likes, or maybe you're into BDSM and you're willing to let a guy and play with a guy, because in a lot of kink, you're not having intercourse. You're not having even anything sexual. Sometimes you're not even naked in the kink. And a male figure can be like a power exchange. You know, have you ever heard of FinDom? This is a rising BDSM subgroup.
You know, I just saw something about that and I don't know what it is. Just yesterday I was looking at something and it made reference to it and I don't know what it is.
Well, it started with, it stayed what it started as, but it's also become a way of straight.
I know where I saw it. It was on your website.
Oh, was it?
Yes. Please.
Okay. Why don't you tell us what
it is? Please tell us.
I
just remember it. That's where I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first time I read about it was somewhere on the internet, and this woman was talking about finding her husband's, was having an affair, it looked like. And the woman was blackmailing him, right? She had naked pictures of him, get his credit card, all his office email, his business, everything, home address. And she was extorting money from him and saying, if you don't pay me, your wife will know everything. And you see this picture, it's going right to her. Your children will see. And he got home and she was like, oh my God, first, I know I'm very betrayed and I'm upset with you. And at the same time, I'm worried, what are we going to do? And he said, stop. I get off on all that. That's FinDom, where I give up all this to her. And then of course she was like, she thought she was going to have compassion for him. Now she's really upset because it's a real, you know, but so then what it is it's like bondage without rope. It's around money. You're giving your money. You're giving all that.
Well, so Finn's for financial.
What's that?
Finn is for financial. Got it.
Finn. Yes. That's financial domination. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right. So you're a Finn Dom or a Finn sub, and the straight guys have recognized, you mean I don't even have to show my genitals? I can just show my feet and go like this and make you pay me, and I have all your information. And the guys that do it are totally into it. They love it. And I love it because it's such a nuanced, unusual yet. And then when you tell people about it, they're like, that's not sex. Tell that to them. Because the straight guys and the women that are doing it, they don't get off on, they're getting off on the power, they're getting off on the money. Some of the guys will even say that they're cash sexuals. You know, that it's the cash that turns them on. So I've got a lot to say about that.
You know, more fodder for my next book.
Yeah, right. Put it in there.
Although we haven't We haven't come out in terms of exactly what books Judy's writing, so there's a pseudonym involved. Well, I guess we're coming out right now.
Let's just say erotic fiction.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Good. Well, there's a lot of things that can be eroticized, and people dismiss it. Like, well, because it doesn't fit their schema, that it can't be true. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for doing this, Joe. This has been fascinating.
Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about this stuff.
And tell folks, like, how can they get information about you and your books and, you know,
and your TikTok name and all that?
Yeah, right. Yeah. So all my social media, including TikTok, all you got to do is put the @ Dr. Joe Kort, DrJoeKort. And you'll find me everywhere. Although there's a lot of, you have to go to the real Dr. Joe Kort. A lot of people are impersonating me. That's a whole other thing. But anyways, and then I have a website, JoeKort.com. And then my podcasts are on there. And then they can find all that other stuff.
Sounds great.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, and it's a great discussion.
Welcome back. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Dr. Joe Kort. He certainly was a font of information, and we enjoyed him and hearing what he had to say. Yeah.
Just a lot of fun guy. Really fun guy and really enjoyed, and had no idea he had, like, what did he say, 600 some thousand followers on TikTok.
Something like that.
Just an enormous number of followers on TikTok to the point where people are impersonating him. But we were interviewing the real Joe Kort.
Yes,
and,
we were.
Hope you enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just put in another word for some of our books and our sponsor.
Right. So Bruce's books, Reigniting the Spark, Why Stable Relationships Lose Intimacy and How to Get It Back. And the latest one, It's Not About Communication, Why Everything You Know About Couples Therapy is Wrong.
Both of those available. If you go to our website, ctin7.com, CT, like couples therapy, in the number 7, ctin7.com. If you go there, you will see there is a tab there for books and also for our merch that we talked about earlier, our mugs and our tote bags and all that stuff. But if you go to the books tab, you will get all sorts of information about how to acquire those books and also the other smaller books that I've written. And remember to sign up for Dr. Chalmers' newsletter, which you can do right from our ctn7.com
right
website.
And when you do that, you will get a free PDF of 7 Words to Jumpstart Your Love Life, another one of Bruce's smaller booklets.
That's right. So let's put in a word for our sponsor.
That's right. Our sponsor is The Blue Tent, Erotic Tales from the Bible by Laria Zilber. And if you enjoy erotica, or if you've never read erotica before and would like a nice introduction to it, we highly recommend this book.
Absolutely.
And it's available on Amazon right now in Kindle and paperback form and soon to be audio.
And you know, it's interesting because when you think about erotica, it is usually associated with women more than men.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking as a cisgendered heterosexual male, I think I really enjoyed that book.
Yes, it's an anthology of 10 short stories based on tales from the Bible or the Old Testament. And very spicy.
Very spicy indeed.
To spice up your sex life. It's fun to read. In bed to your partner or by yourself.
Absolutely. And by spicy, I will say, you mean explicit.
Yes, it
is
explicit.
Very explicit with respect to, couples' sexuality. So,
Another thing that we want to tell you is if you would like to be on our podcast or have suggestions for ideas that you would like us to talk about on our podcast, you can go to ctn7.com and you can... there's a place where you can put that in.
You can. You can even schedule a time to be on the show. We'll ask you what you'd like to talk about. And, you know, if you think you would be a good guest, you're probably right. That is quite likely the case. So let us know. Also, if you have questions and topics you'd like us to address, we didn't have a listener question today. We're kind of, we've run low on listener questions. So, hey folks, we're having in fact, I'm gonna stick my neck right out there. We're having a special on listener questions, which is to say, if you submit to us a listener question that we deem suitable for use in one of our podcasts, I will send you free of charge a download of an audiobook for More recent book, It's Not About Communication. That is a significant dollar amount right there.
Yeah,
I forgot how
it's
much
like
I charged.
$20
it's like
or
20
something.
bucks. Yeah, so that is, we will send you a download for that. So send us and please mention that. This is a funny thing for an old guy to say, right? Please mention that I said that in the email in case I forget, right?
Sure, why not? You know, it's a promotion, so
Yeah,
what the heck?
absolutely. But yeah, if you have a question or a topic that we deem suitable for us to talk about, and again, if you think it is, I'll bet you it is. Wouldn't be surprising. And we select your question, then we will give you that reward. And so I think we've covered what we need to
I
cover.
think we
Yes.
have.
Until next time,
Remember, be kind
don't panic
and have faith.